Welcome to the Holden Village Podcast. Holden is a community of education, programming, and worship located in the remote wilderness of the Cascade Mountains. These snapshots provide a glimpse into the learnings taking place in our community. Let's tune in to this week's highlight.
Hello, my name is Chance Boyt. I've been here since 2017. I arrived after receiving an MDiv and spending 3 years in seminary, and then I came up here to help with the reopening after remediation, specifically in the kitchen, because I had been a head cook in the village for 2 years previous to that, back in the early 2000-teens, 2010 to 2012, after I graduated from St. Olaf College. So I'd never been to the village before 2010. I'd heard about it, having been an Ole and a Minnesotan, but I'd never been here. So I came up sight unseen on long-term staff in 2010 as a cook, which was a job that I did not want, but it was the only job available. And then I ended up falling in love with the kitchen, and then leaving for a few years, and then wanted to come back and help with the reopening. And now I've been one of the senior managers in the village since June of 2019.
Maybe you can talk about some of the changes you've seen since you're coming to the village, and things that you're proud of that you're leaving, food philosophy-wise. And all of that being something that people can think about when they get their own food.
There's a really long history in the Holden kitchen that spans all the way back to the very beginning, and food service in the village has shifted throughout all of that with different focuses, different types of ethics, different ways of expressing that ethic. And some of that, I don't have a history with the village before 2010, so everything I've heard about it is at least a little bit true, but there's probably a lot of lore. So in 2010, when I came in, the food philosophy was an abbreviated version of what it is now. It was much smaller. It was very succinct. We retained some of the lines from that original food philosophy in the revision that we did. One of the things I realized over my time here since 2017, I really believe that my call back to the village was to help facilitate both a remembering and a blossoming into a fuller understanding of what the food philosophy is. The kitchen, through the remediation years, 2014 to 2017, was not operated by Holden Village. It was operated by a company that specialized in remote food service for the type of project that was happening in the village at the time. It's the same type of company that does food service on oil rigs in the Arctic Ocean. And that came with a certain type of way of doing food and a way of understanding food, a certain relationship to food and eating, which was important for the time. And then when remediation ended, Holden took the kitchen back, and we started trying to remember, how do we do the things that we used to do before remediation? Not just from an operational perspective, not just how do we cook for 400 people, but also philosophically, like what is the kitchen's relationship to the rest of the village's mission and the village's ethic, and why do we matter? The food philosophy from the early 2010s was there, it was still in our bones, and in 2018, myself and the head cooks at that time took the food philosophy and really started thinking a little bit more about it. We wanted to expand it. We wanted to buff it up. The food philosophy then didn't really tell us what to do. It said, you know, these are the practices that we try to have. We prefer small-scale agriculture over large-scale agriculture. We want to support distributors and companies who prioritize workers' wellness over profit. And there was some theological and philosophical writing into it, but there wasn't a lot. And really, in the kitchen, that philosophical and kind of spiritual undertone is what motivates the whole thing in the first place for the cooks and for the community generally. It's also what's most interesting to people when they read the food philosophy. One of the things that we really wanted to explore and push back against was this idea that food is primarily an issue of personal taste. It's primarily a mechanical issue. It's much more than that. Eating is spiritual, not just in the eating of the food, but in the sharing of food. There's also every food choice we make is an ethical choice as well. And it says something about what we hold as sacred, what we hold as important. And the cooks and I really wanted to bring it front and center, how all the things that we do in the kitchen say something about what this organization is. So we really wanted to explore that, like, kind of spiritual, philosophical side of food. Also the tensions implicit in that, being a hospitality organization, which comes with certain connotations in our culture of making people feel good and giving people what they want, but recognizing that there's also this tension with responsibility. And how do we, you know, if we continue to operate in a everybody gets what they want all the time paradigm, that's not the best for the earth. It doesn't really recognize that we have finite resources, both like interpersonal finite resources, like we can't continue to give and give and give, and also physical resources.
Could you describe how the tension is played out in like a typical week if you're meal planning? I mean, I'm just thinking of lentil loaf and the bad rap that it's got. I enjoy it and I like ketchup on it and it's delicious. People get excited about having meat up here.
And meat is kind of the distillation of that tension where people are accustomed to going to a place and having a meat option at every meal. And there's a cost to it philosophically. There's a cost to it environmentally. There's also benefits to it. Having a high protein diet is good for some people. It's also, you know, in our culture, it is, feels safe. There's pros and cons to that. The way that I always say it is there's no such thing as a pure choice. There's no 100% right choice. There's no 100% wrong choice. It's just being intentional about the consequences of the choice that you make. Lentil loaf is a great example of something that is kind of a meat substitute in a way. And I think we make it really well, but it's not everybody's favorite all the time. And the same way that meat is animal products come with a pretty high cost, but they're also sometimes they're really emotionally important for people. It's not to say that one or the other is the right or the wrong answer, but how do we be really intentional about how we explore the tensions within those? Right now, we work with a vendor who sells us an entire cow, and we get it processed a certain way. We get it in certain cuts and ground beef. So how do we make that purchase with eyes wide open instead of buying meat because that's what people do? Or on the other side, not buying meat because it's quote, bad for the environment, and letting that be kind of a black and white approach to it. But how do we approach it from a relational perspective and mix both in there? Really, it's about, and this has been a challenge in the Holden Kitchen over the course of many years, is every batch of cooks and every community from year to year has a slightly different way of approaching food and the ethics. Some people are like, we don't want any almonds because they use a lot of water. And some people are like, we don't want any meat, or we want this. We want bananas. We don't want bananas. The food philosophy helps to ground the conversation so that when we talk about the food choices that we make individually and as a community, we're actually having an intentional conversation and not just talking about, oh, I want meat because it tastes good or because I'm used to it. But I want meat because it tastes good and I'm used to it, but I'm also aware that in getting that, there's costs associated with that, so I'm not seeing that. From the opposite perspective, if we choose to not purchase something for some reason because of the environmental or the social implications of that item, we're practicing seeing the whole picture instead of zeroing in on the thing that is kind of a proof text. The food philosophy, in a similar way to how the kitchen staff and the kitchen as an area work, is kind of a laboratory for how to think through and relate to other people and to relate to the earth. It's a really small example. We're just one small community. You could argue that we do have a really large reach in our constituency, but our reach is relatively small compared to some huge food company or huge restaurant chain. So maybe we're small beans, but there's still a great invitation to explore that here as an example to people that come up here and to the rest of the world. One of the things we talk about in the kitchen as staff members, especially with a volunteer-run kitchen where people don't always have a ton of experience in food service when they come, is the kitchen invites us behind the silver counter to practice ways of being with one another that we want to embody outside, on the other side of the silver counter or on the other side of Lake Chelan. It's an intimate area where we can practice with our patterns of thinking, practice with our patterns of conscious or unconscious action, and all towards like becoming more whole people. That's kind of from a interpersonal relationship stance, but the food philosophy, I think, is another way of doing that. Practicing asking the questions in a community that is pretty like-minded in terms of their environmental convictions, but learning how to talk about those food choices and how to not make them unintentionally, because ultimately Holden exists for what Holden does downlake. Holden doesn't exist for itself. It's not just, if it just exists as a chance to navel gaze, then it's like not really doing much in the world. It's offering respite yet, and that's important. But the food philosophy is there to bring people into a way of thinking about food that they can bring with them when they leave, whether they're staff members that are cooking or staff members that are eating the food and work in another area, or guests that are eating the food and coming in for shorter amounts of time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. No, it's brought a huge awareness to it. And I think it's not something people have the habit of thinking that much about.
Mm-hmm. One of the challenges with that is it does require a conversation. It's not enough to put the food philosophy on a bulletin board. It really is supposed to support a community conversation that is always going to shift. So from an organizational perspective, it does have its challenges. And the issue of importance to one winter community may not be the same issue of importance to another winter community. The topic of bananas is a great example. How when I was on staff before, we didn't buy bananas because there's a whole lot of good reasons to not purchase bananas in a northern climate. And now we have been purchasing bananas. Different communities express their values differently. And being a steward of that conversation is, it's both a very short-term, immediate conversation while also being a long-term conversation. And at Holden, that long-term horizon is a little bit more challenging because there's so much turnover. That's an invitation for the next kitchen, the next leadership team, as we move into the next 5 years after mine remediation. How do we continue to keep that conversation vibrant in the village and downlake? The food philosophy was revised in 2018. It's not intended to be a final document. It's a living and breathing thing. We haven't revised it since.
Is it something accessible that maybe on the website?
It is. Yeah, it's at www.holdenvillage.org/about-us/kitchen. I think. Yeah. I'm pretty sure. What I'm trying to say by that challenge is I desire for the kitchen and for the community to continue to grow in its capacities, to lean into the topics, the food philosophy being one topic, but how to lean into that over and over and over again instead of what sometimes happens here where we have the conversation once and think, okay, that's good, that's done, we've had the conversation. And then 8 months later, everybody, you know, 95% of the people in the room are different. You have to have that conversation again. How do we keep it in people's heads and fresh, especially when, I mean, once I depart, no one in the community will have been part of that crew that revised the food philosophy in 2018. They'll all have departed. Then it's purely an inherited document. It's not a document created by the current kitchen staff. So how do they take that and make it their own? I'm excited to see where it goes.
I'm thinking of the management you've done of people, and you've had a knack for helping people along and become head cooks that haven't had that kind of role. And I heard just briefly the way people interact as kitchen staff help people be a more whole person. I'd like to hear more about that. Also, the climate of the kitchen as a professional food service place, but also it being on the relaxed side of things.
Well, I wouldn't say that the Holden kitchen is on the relaxed side of things because it's a quick, fast pace. Regardless of whether or not you call it a professional food environment, it still has to observe health code. There's lots of things that normal restaurants do that we also do. I would say that it's been my desire and the desire of many cooks over the last 4 years. If you look back into some of the documentation from past kitchens over the decades, there's been this thread of relationality through it all. In some food service establishments, it is product over process. It's product over relationship. We want a good burger so that we can make money off of it. Here, we're not selling a burger at cost. When you come up as a guest, you are paying a fee to enjoy the entire community, and everything is pretty much all you can want when you're here. So it's a different type of sales structure. But underneath all that, there's this recognition that we're living together in community. Guests, staff, we're all in this together. We're all in this remote environment. We're relying on one another. And the kitchen is a distillation of that. So When we talk about professional environments in terms of people who study and are doing this as a career, that may or may not be the case for some people in our kitchen. Sometimes the kitchen is a jumping off point for people to start exploring food as a potential career path, but that's not a prerequisite for being there. But underneath it all, if the kitchen community is happy, if they love one another, if they're leaning into their growing edges and celebrating their successes, and being whole people with one another, the food will always then be good because happy people make happy food. Sad people and stressed people also make good food. I feel like it probably tastes less good than happy people. Or the cost of that good food for the staff is not worth it, especially when you're looking at this place as a community. That's one of the reasons over the past 4 years, especially after remediation, which was a much more corporate environment, and again, appropriate for the time and the objectives, but not a necessary model going forward for the village. This is where I think my training in chaplaincy and seminary really came to bear on what I ended up doing in the kitchen was, if our first job in the village is to be in community, to love each other, to struggle with one another, and to grow with one another, how do we focus on that kind of work first and then trust that the details of the specific area, the kitchen, or now the community services manager, housekeeping, or programmer, arts, how do we let our jobs be an extension of us as whole people in a community? What does that look like? I'm guessing it's probably better than compartmentalized or fractured people.
Mm-hmm. How does the bread work into the food philosophy? I mean, everybody loves bread, except people that have the gluten-free. But there's just a wonderful freshness to what I ate about an hour ago. Why is bread special at Holton Village? What are some interesting things about the bread baking process?
Yeah, why is bread so special at Holton? I would also ask, why is bread so special everywhere? Because it seems to me that Holton is not unique in that everybody here loves bread. And I don't know what it is, because the bread itself is not the fanciest of all breads. It's a pretty standard sandwich bread that is made fresh every day. But I think that freshness is what matters. It's that connection to the cooks through, you're not buying the bread at a grocery store in a plastic bag that was made by a machine on the East Coast. The bread is being made by somebody who woke up at 5:30 that morning to throw the bread together. There's also some novelty in the Holton bread because it's the recipe that we developed is one that's mostly foolproof. Bread baking is not a foolproof activity generally. It takes time and attention to detail to do artisan bread. It's not an accidental thing. It's usually a high level of intention that goes into it. But the Holton bread is a really great example of something that was worked out, and this predates my relationship to specific recipe. There's lots of different ways of shifting things. You can substitute things pretty freely with differing results, but usually still a good loaf of bread. That's part of the novelty of it too, is just the infinite ways the Holton cooks have made the bread different based on the things they've thrown into it as little additions, whether it's sunflower seeds or throwing over leftover cooked breakfast cereal from the day before. One of our cooks ground up dry bread and used that to supplement the flour in the new loaf of bread, called a bread squared. So there's some novelty in it. There's a high degree of personality in the Holton bread people appreciate. Sometimes people come up and they're like, oh, I just love that bread. Can I get the recipe? And I feel like I always have to caveat saying, know that the bread that you ate may not be exactly the bread that's shown on this paper, but just trust the recipe and play with it. And over time, you'll figure out the way that you want to make it. And that's pretty cool. Having worked in a professional bakery before, that is not the way that the professional baking world works with bread. It's usually a lot more regimented and structured. And then there's also the other part of bread at Holton Village is its place on the island, which is a very symbolic place in the community where you can get bread 24/7 and toasted and put on homemade peanut butter. There's the toaster. If Holton were to have an emblem, a wax seal for its letters, I imagine the conveyor toaster would be the symbol that would be on that one. It's such a central image, and it's a place where people, they look forward to it when they're not in the village. It's the first place they stop when they get off the bus for a piece of toast at the island. And like I said, the bread itself, it's good. It's not James Beard Award quality bread, but it doesn't need to be. That's not what it's supposed to be. That's not its function. It's a community builder. People connect it to their histories with the village, they connect it with the transformative experiences they've had in the village over however long their relationship has been. And then the other thing is bread just has such a romantic kind of spiritual component to it for so many people. It's this long process. It's a little bit mysterious. You mix the stuff together and then it just blows up over the course of a few hours and you throw it in the oven and it's like a totally different thing. So I think that's one of the other things that's special about bread.
Is there anything, you haven't mentioned any specific partnerships to help fulfill the philosophy?
Yeah, I mean, we partner with a lot of different vendors, down lake, small and medium scale. You can go to our website again there and see a list. We have a list of all of our local vendors that we work with I think lots of links to their websites. We are always looking for new vendors. We want to support small-scale agriculture when we find it. We want to also continue relationships of support with our existing vendors. Yeah, and actually, I'd say as food services lead, that was one of the most interesting parts of the job was, I remember back in 2018, the then guest experience manager and I went down lake and did a little road trip around the state to visit all of our local vendors because we hadn't really met with them in person since remediation. So we went up and visited the rancher in Tenasket and we went to Brownfield Orchards.
It's like cake tasting before a wedding?
A little bit. It was so fun. And I learned a lot on that trip. I'd never heard of grafting in orchardry before. And that like blew my mind that you could grow a whole branch off of one apple tree that was an entirely different apple tree. I was shook. I say all that to say that our local partnerships are one of the best ways that we can express our environmental ethics and our social ethics. So if anybody's listening to this and they're a farmer in the area and they're interested in partnering with the Holden Kitchen, email foodservices@holdenvillage.org. Let us know who you are.
Thanks for joining us. Be sure to view the links in the description for more information or visit our website to find out more about the village. We hope you will make a pilgrimage to Holden. Blessings and peace to you.